Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who's feeling better today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we've kind of touched on this good martini in the past, namely back around the New Hampshire primary when Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich were trying to claim that Mitt Romney's private sector days were a bad thing on his resume as compared to some of the other things that they could have gone after. But the issue has not gone away about the fact that he's wealthy, and somehow there are people who seem to think that that in and of itself is a bad thing. The latest example of this is an interview that Romney had with Megyn Kelly on the Fox News Channel. Here's just a little bit of her setup to a question and a couple of clips from what I think is a pretty effective Romney response, not only now, but assuming he hangs on to this delegate lead and becomes the nominee.
People ask you about football, and you talk about how you know the NFL owners. They ask you about NASCAR, and you talk about how you know some, you know, racing owners. You talk about Ann's two Cadillacs, and people say, he can't relate. He's so rich, he can't relate to the rest of us. Megan, why do you keep doing that?
Megan, guess what? I made a lot of money. I've been very successful. I'm not going to apologize for that. I understand the economy, not because I've debated the economy in a subcommittee of Congress. I understand the economy because I've been in it. Yeah. I've lived it.
I think that's pretty effective, Jim. It also, I think, helps to blunt the president's argument that he's the guy of the 99% when you see events like last night at the state dinner when a bunch of his campaign bundlers and a whole bunch of other millionaires and billionaires were there sipping the expensive wine that they wouldn't tell the public how much it costs. So if Mitt Romney had this as some sort of liability, I think he's doing a decent job of tamping that down. He's got other work to do, but he's been pretty effective on this front, I think.
Yeah, this was the best answer we've heard from Romney in this area for a while. And I think Megyn Kelly had a perfectly legitimate point in her question, which is that whatever the topic at hand is, chances are Mitt Romney has friends who own whatever industry produces that thing, whether it's an NFL team or NASCAR team or something like that. What Romney does well here, when you have something great in your life, do you want to keep that for yourself, or do you want to share it with others? And I don't mean like in a material form. I mean that Mitt Romney has lived a very blessed life. And, you know, look, you know, being the son of a governor certainly opens doors to you. But most of his fortune was made by himself at Bain Capital. And I think what Mitt Romney is saying here is that he wants everyone else to enjoy what he has enjoyed, to enjoy the success that he has enjoyed. He is too humble a man to set himself up as a role model. But in a way, look, if you go out into the business world and start a business and work with others and create value for your customers and succeed the way he had, you know, we'd all be dancing in the streets if we could do that. So I think this is what Mitt Romney has to do, is to say, look, this, you know, the issue of my wealth is not that I got this wealth from taking it from somebody else. It's that, look, I want more entrepreneurship in America. I want more Americans to be able to enjoy what I have enjoyed. And let me show you, let me teach you, let me help cultivate the values and ideas and approaches to money and hard work and success in this country. I think every once in a while on Twitter, I kind of make this observation that there's a picture of Barack Obama as a young man that appears to be smoking a non-tobacco cigarette, shall we say. And there's the picture of Mitt Romney with his partners at Bain Capital in their beginning. And they're all in their fancy suits and they're holding up. I think Mitt Romney is holding up a dollar bill, but the whole idea is they've got money spilling out of their pockets or something. It's a very silly looking picture. And a lot of people looked at that photo and thought it was scandalous, thought there was something wrong there, thought it looked like, you know, a young Gordon Gekko there or something. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, wait a minute. Material success is more of a problem than illegal drug use? Really? Like, this is the scandalous photo here? You know, which option would you rather have your son do? And if your son grows up to be successful on Wall Street, that really is not the worst thing that could happen there. So there's no point in trying to distance yourself from your past and you know, your past actions and what you've done. Embrace it, Governor Romney. I think you have a lot to be proud of. And I think you can say, look, I have lived the American dream. I want to help more people live that dream as well. And I think that's a winning message for this cycle.
Yeah, if Romney can pick up the vast majority of the people who would like to be wealthy, and Obama picks up the majority of the people who would like to be potheads, I like our odds come November. So,
yeah, okay. not as secure as it might have been, say, a generation ago, but I'll go with you.
On to martini number two now, and back to Afghanistan. Unfortunately, we've spent a little bit of time on the second martini in Afghanistan, and this one is a little bit different. Leon Panetta, the defense secretary, of course, going over there on an unannounced trip, probably to try and smooth over what he can with Hamid Karzai and the Afghan government in the wake of the what we think at this point is a lone soldier who basically massacred about 16 people, including women and children, over the weekend. But he comes into Camp Bastion in Afghanistan and addresses U.S. troops, I think mostly Marines, as well as some Afghan security forces. And in what is a largely unprecedented move, the U.S. troops are told to disarm before entering the meeting. Supposedly, it's designed to not make the Afghan security forces feel inferior or as second-class citizens or something, because they have always been forced to disarm whenever an American dignitary comes in. And, Jim, I don't know that this is having the desired effect. I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on the morale of the Afghans if they really are turning on us. And it's certainly not doing any good for our morale that we're basically being downgraded so that the ally that we have there might feel a little bit better about themselves.
Yeah. When I had first heard this, obviously this comes on the heels of the awful slaughter of children in Afghanistan. And you couldn't help but wonder that someone, you know, there was some nervousness about the folks who Panetta would be meeting out in Afghanistan. It only takes one person with a gun to cause a serious issue. And so my attitude is, look, his security detail has to make the best decisions they can for his safety. But the idea that this was done for the self-esteem of the Afghan National Army puts it in a whole new light, and I think a troubling new light. I believe it was Alan West had said earlier today that in a combat zone, U.S. soldiers should never be separated from their firearms. I mean, you know, God forbid, whatever happened if the Taliban or somebody tried to attack at that particular moment or something like that. This is going to be a bad martini anyway, you shake it, because either there's a possibility that they felt there was a fear of somebody within the ranks causing an incident with their firearm, or they decided to disarm the vast majority of U.S. soldiers in that room because they didn't want to hurt some feelings of the Afghans. And it's baffling. I think it shows how messy this policy has become, how incoherent it has become. You're seeing a great deal of Afghanistan fatigue in the American voters, and you know, stories like this, I think, will only fuel that sense.
I think we saw the validity of the existing policy yesterday because it was an Afghan interpreter who actually tried to have a car bomb go off just as Panetta was preparing to arrive. So there's probably a good reason why we have that pre-existing policy there. Yeah, I don't think they necessarily should have changed it just to make people feel better. But anyway, moving on to martini number three now, and this takes us down to Lake County, Florida. In the Democratic County headquarters there, we check in here with one of the local TV stations. Their reporter's name is Bernd Peterson, and Don Van Beck is the U.S. veteran quoted here.
It was a 3-by-5-foot American flag flying from that pole, but in place of the stars, it featured an image of President Obama.
I can't describe how upset I was, because you just don't do that to the American flag. If you've been a veteran and fought, and some died for this flag, you don't want to see it desecrated. That's how simple it is.
And so basically, as they described there, Jim, it was a flag underneath the actual American flag with Obama's face in the blue Union part of the flag instead of the 50 stars. The Democratic Party chairwoman wanted nothing of it, threatened to call the cops on the veterans who wanted to take the flag down. And then she came back out 10 minutes later, and oh, lo and behold, the flag code says you can't put other things on the flag. And so she took the flag down and cut it off the pole with a pair of scissors. This is obviously what seems to be a local issue, but apparently you can actually buy this flag somewhere. So something tells me it goes a little bit higher than Lake County, Florida. There was another guy in the piece, another veteran, who said that this reminds him of the huge pictures of Chairman Mao and other dictators in the past who have basically made their countries a cult of personality. I don't think this can necessarily be tacked on to Obama, but his ego is apparently influencing others, and it's good that this got nipped in the bud, or at least hopefully it did.
Greg, first of all, I seem to remember this flag being sighted in 2009. It didn't get an enormous amount of attention. It was just seen flying from some flagpole. Somebody on eBay was selling versions of this flag. This is a crazy martini, but call me crazy. This is a fantastic martini. I want Obama face flags replacing American flags in front of Democratic Party headquarters all across this country. I cannot think of anything. And then, like, let's show that as a montage, and then use the Obama claim from 3 days before Election Day 2008, saying that, look, in 3 days, we will fundamentally change this country. Not saying we're going to change our policies, not saying we're going to change our government, not going to change presidents, we're going to change America itself. And what better way to symbolize the change that Obama has brought to America than to take the 50 stars off the flag and put his big smiling mug right there. I think it screams cult of personality. I think it screams a worship of the ego in a dictatorial form, and I think this says a great deal about the Democrats. I think it says a great deal about that local Democratic Party that it never crossed their mind that it might offend people. That is the ultimate elevation of the leader of the country over the country itself. I mean, the whole point of our founding fathers is that the whole point of term limits to the presidency is that, look, presidents come and go. The Constitution is what lasts forever, and the country itself is what's supposed to go on forever. And that, you know, all of us are merely temporary stewards of this great gift that the founding fathers have managed to create for us. I want to see this flag everywhere between now and Election Day, Greg, because I think it'll do, very few things can do more to damage the Democratic Party's brand and Obama's brand than to create this, you know, egomaniacal, out of control cult of personality tone around them. So I'll be ordering mine, Greg. I don't know about you.
Well, it certainly could bode well politically if a lot of Democrats get behind it. Some of the words of the veterans, though, they're really stuck with me. Radio America does some work with a bunch of different veterans organizations, and I've been able to do some oral histories with Korean War veterans since it's been 60 years now since the Korean War. One of them was a prisoner of war and talked about what it meant to him to see the flag when he came out of captivity. He said it's more beautiful to him than any woman he's ever seen, more beautiful than any sunset. And so on the one hand, it certainly exposes the Democrats for where they are politically and mentally right now. But at the same time, it also once again shows what side of traditional American values the Republicans hopefully are on here, too. So we'll leave it there. Jim, glad you're feeling better. We'll talk to you later.
Greg, I'm always glad when I can make it here to put a happy spin on a depressing and a frustrating and outrageous story.
Nobody does it better. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.